Kisses, or do you ever send a full stop? Do you know where the wild things go? They go along to take your honey. Way down how we build our breakfast down and sleep, my love, my love. Pistol shows, hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blows. She's morphine, queen of my vaccine, my love, my love, love, love. Soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Germaline, disinfect the scene, my love, my love, love, love. But please don't go. I love you so, my lovely.
Please don't go, please don't go, I love you so. out how much you done spent. I swear she must believe it's all hell to see.
Hey boy, you better bring the check around
to the sad, sad truth, the dirty Lord down.
Hey John. Hey, 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 hey! What's doing?
Not much.
Not much? Did you pick up your wine?
No, not yet. I have gotten over there. I haven't delivered it.
All right.
I have not got over there.
All right. I had an interesting situation this weekend. We had a little party, and there was this wine. This 2018 Margaux.
What about it?
Well, we had them, and the problem was that we ordered a certain amount of bottles for this particular course of this particular meal, and there was almost out of, I think, a total of maybe 8 bottles or so, there was almost a half a bottle in total of sediment. There was a
really?
Lot of, yeah, there was a lot of sediment. So we kind
they
of
did. Usually find that. They usually rack Margaux pretty well, and you don't end up, it's Chateau Margaux, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Which costs about $500 a bottle.
No, it wasn't. Well, what the? No. It was a 2018.
I don't care.
I could tell you the exact Margaux. All right. Here. It was. I'll tell you a second. Right here. It was coming to it. Right here. Chateau Seran Margaux.
Oh, Chateau Seran is not Chateau Margaux.
Okay, so Seran. I had the word Seran, I forgot.
Yeah, that's a cheap wine.
It was $75 a bottle.
Yeah, well, compared to 500.
Well, compared to 500, yes. I agree. Okay, other than that, you ready?
Yeah.
Why is this not coming up here? Hey, what happened? One second. Okay, there it is. No, yeah. All right, this goes off. This goes off. This goes off. Okay, I'm ready to go. All right, here we go.
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's the 21st of October. Where have you been the last 2 weeks?
I've been around. I didn't send you any pictures. I didn't even tell you where I was.
You did send me a picture.
I did send you one, maybe.
You were in Tuscany.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was nice. It was nice. I mean, I was in Turkey for a little while.
You went to Turkey.
Went Turkey's to Turkey, great. Istanbul, which everybody smokes. Everybody smokes during dinner.
They smoke a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Then went to Cappadocia
Turkish
to go.
Turkish tobacco, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. They one hand they have the fork, the did other hand they have the cigarette.
Wait, you went to Istanbul. Did you buy a rug?
I didn't buy a rug. I didn't buy veneers, and I didn't get hair implants.
Wow.
That seems to be the thing.
I don't know about that, but I don't know how you got out of Turkey without buying a rug or two.
Yeah. They tried, but I'm like, no, it's not happening. And then went to Cappadocia for hot air ballooning, which we were winded out. The wind was over 10 miles an hour, so they canceled it. But I did go to, and I'll tell you offline another time, one of the most amazing cooking courses I've ever done, or classes. Very cool. Started with...
Where?
In Cappadocia. It was a...
I keep wanting to say Gesundheit every time you say that.
it was just very cool. It was a farm table kind of thing. It was very unexpected. It was very old school. It was just very fun, a lot of fun.
What did they teach you to cook?
Made this millet and this rice with all these different ingredients and stuffed all our own fresh vegetables, and then made, I think it's called dolma, with the grape leaves that we rolled up with the fresh grape leaves that we picked, and then they blanched, and then we rolled those with some of the millet rice, and then with all sorts of other tomato sauces, and then put that on like a big smoky fire. And then we made this other beef dish, and then we made... They made grape molasses. The guy was stomping the grapes, cooking the grapes, and made this grape molasses. And we used kind of a roux, what they called something differently. And we made this like grape molasses candy.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Good fun. Good clean fun. So,
except for the toes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was using boots, actually. It was a kind of, he had these
worse
firefighter kind of boots on or something. I wanted to dedicate, we haven't done this before, but I thought this was a little bit special. I want to dedicate this episode of our show to Sophia Maria, someone who is very special to us, a good friend of the family. My good friend's daughter passed away last week, very unexpectedly. A weird health situation. Too young, 20 years old, and it was a very sad thing. So I thought we'd dedicate this show to her today.
Sounds good to me.
So, all right, warm up. We have a new crisis brewing. The banking sector once again is at it. Three different fraud, bankruptcies, weird stuff that happened within not a particular bank, but two a particular bank. And that raised the alarm and the flags, and everybody was all upset for about a day about this because, like, oh my God, you know, the three in a row. And Jamie Dimon's talking about things. We have some notes on that. Well, it seems that there was some hanky-panky going on with some of these companies, like overselling their accounts receivable. So what they would do is they'd factor their accounts receivable and like, okay, we have $1 million coming in, but we need to buy some stuff. So what they do is they factor it out and basically pledge their accounts receivable to a bank, and that bank will give them money ahead of time. That's all fine and good, except when you do it five times.
Yeah, you're only supposed to do it once.
Yeah, it's like the movie or the play The Producers. Remember that one?
That's what you do, yeah.
Do you remember the show? I saw it with Nathan Lane, but do you remember the and Matthew Broderick? Do you remember, or not? No, that wasn't it. Was that even in the show? Was Matthew Broderick in the show?
I think he might have been.
Yeah,
the movie was Zero Mostel and the comedian guy. I can't remember his name right off.
And you remember? Do you remember? It was all Gene Wilder. No,
Gene Wilder.
Do you remember? I don't remember that. And then there was a remake of the movie too. Do you remember?
No, the first movie is the best one of the group.
Do you remember the Broadway play musical, the name of the musical that they used to sell the shows to the old ladies?
Yeah, Springtime for Hitler.
Springtime for Hitler. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. And that was it was supposed to be a flop, and everybody would lose their money. Well, I don't know if that situation was similar, but maybe somebody got the idea for that, for what was going on in the auto parts industry. And that was one. And there was two others that happened all rapid fire, and, you know, billions of dollars disappeared. So now all of a sudden the alarms are ringing that are we seeing too much of a push for either private equity for credit, or private credit, I should say, private equity firms doing private credit and just trying to find stuff, and doesn't matter about the underwriting and banks getting sloppy with their underwriting. That's kind of what the whole theme was of this 1 or 2 day freakout. And everybody's like,
basically criminal activity.
Yeah. And it's already forgotten. The news cycle is so fast, and the cycle in the investment world is so fast right now that literally things happen within minutes of the news item and recover within a day. This happened also 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago on a Friday when President Trump, whether he had some horrible gas maybe from a bad Mexican meal or something, was aggravated and somehow lashed out at China on a Friday afternoon saying, you know what? By God, we are going to put 100% tariff on them because they're, you know, curbing exports of their rare earth materials. Markets freaked out.
Yeah.
Well, a day later, J.D. Vance came in, and he walked it back saying something like, you know, don't you know this is a negotiation tactic? Which is the equivalent of you and I playing No Limit Hold'em and me pushing all in and then saying, you know, by the way, John, just want to let you know that's a bluff.
Yeah.
Dumbest negotiation process I've ever seen. And then, and then a day later, before the futures opened on Monday, President Trump coming out and saying, you know what, everything's going to be fine. President Xi, Xi and I are very good friends. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. So markets rallied dramatically that Monday. And even today, there was conversation by Trump saying, you know, I think, you know, we're going to make something like we're going to make good progress, but I don't think we're going to have a meeting. Like, wait, you have to have a meeting. This is the whole point of it, right? You know, we're going to make good progress at the meeting.
Yeah, the whole thing was a big meeting. They're going to have a meeting.
Right. We're going to do this meeting, but, you know, I think we're going to make good progress and things will be fine, you know, after the meeting, but I don't think we're going to have a meeting. Like, what? How does that work? So markets are getting played pretty well, and investors are just taking it in stride. They were in sideways mode pretty much since the last month or so, probably the last month until maybe yesterday. Then they, not I don't think all, but the Dow broke out, particularly because of Apple. We have some news about that. And we have an announcement of the winner of the Close to the Pin for Lithium America Corporation. And by golly, they got it pretty close, considering especially how volatile this thing was or is.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yep. Yields are dropping. We're finally seeing what was hoped for with the idea that the Fed was going to reduce rates, but it's actually happening due to other reasons. The rates are coming down with the dollar again and ahead of some structural, let's say, weakness that's being seen. Now, some things we can't see, remember, because the unemployment rate, for example, the government shut down. We can't get the reports. How convenient.
Yeah, very convenient.
Yeah, we don't know what's happening. We could have a 9% unemployment rate right now. We wouldn't even know. Yeah, obviously, that's a stretch. But point is that most of the major governmental-based statistics, you're not going to get those reports. And then whatever you get, it doesn't matter at that point by the time you get it, because it'll be the next one will be coming out already. And now the Fed made a recent move also. The Fed keeps on working, it seems, though. Government shut down, but the Fed keeps working. Maybe they're on furlough to a degree, on pay also. Well, probably not. They're probably exempt. Although not a government agency now that I think about it, right? But they're on the payroll.
Yeah, the banks are supposed to pay their salaries.
The Fed talked about stopping quantitative tightening. If you remember, we amassed an incredible amount of debt since what year? I don't know. 2008?
2008.
Yeah, 2008, 2008. And then we hockey-sticked it in 2020. And the idea was, you know, before 2020 was, hey, we're going to make progress. We're going to start taking down our debt, you know, because it's horrible debt. And the debt-to-GDP ratios and our costs for the debt servicing are so high, and it's, you know, breaking the back of the country and blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then 2020 comes along, goes crazy again, and then we started with, oh, you know what? We're going to start bringing it down again. The Fed is going to, you know, the Fed's going to get it. Now the numbers are ridiculous, right?
Yeah, once they start to, they got a power hungry. They got like two control levers that they never had before.
Yeah, right.
And they're dicking around with them. Let's see what happens if we do this.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because as soon as they talked about the quantitative tightening being stopped, in other words, what they were doing was allowing for the bonds to roll off so that upon maturity, the bonds would no longer be renewed, thereby reducing the amount of debt that they had outstanding, right?
Yeah.
So they said, we're not going to do this. Starting last week, they said, we're not going to do this anymore. I'm thinking, wait. Well, let's think of what that means. That means that they may not be adding debt.
Please explain.
Yeah, what that means is that they're not going to be reducing the debt anymore. They're, in fact, going to keep it steady, rebuying. Once again, they're actually going into, you're either in one of two modes. You're in quantitative tightening or you're in quantitative easing. Those are the two words, two modes. Not doing anything, keeping it at the same level, is actually the mode of quantitative easing, because you're buying bonds. You're buying them as they mature. So that's a favorable stimulative activity versus quantitative tightening, which is actually pulling money out of the system. So either keeping the debt at the same level or increasing the debt are both stimulative. One is more stimulative than the other, but still stimulative. Hmm. So that's something. What? Why all of a sudden? All of a sudden, we're reducing rates by 0.25% and maybe another one in the next meeting. Who knows? Not that we have the data to know what to do anyway, but whatever they're going to do. And at the same time, you know, all of a sudden, they want to keep money in the system by continuing with the quantitative easing cycle, going back to quantitative easing cycle.
I'm reminded of a story that my old roommate had a girlfriend who was a nurse. And she told this story about how nurses on the night shift, when they came in, with all these patients that were especially in the more critical wards, they cranked the oxygen up to every one of them to the max.
Really? Oh.
And then, because they know they'd get through the night with all this fresh air, fresh oxygen, pure oxygen. And then they'd cut it back before the shift was over, and they'd give it back to the person that came in for the day shift. This is kind of what we're talking about here.
The oxygen.
Cranking the oxygen up.
Yep, yep, yep.
So the economy doesn't die.
Yeah, right, right, right. The life support is being reinstated, right? It's or look at it differently. It's the heroin is being reintroduced to the drug addict. Just when you thought it was safe to take him off and they were healing and they were getting beyond it in the rehab, no, you put it right back on. You know what? Maybe John needs a little more juice. We're never gonna get off this. So the only thing that we can possibly do is try to extinguish the debt through a variety of mechanisms like taking the dollar down. Now, this is something that actually came in as a question, and I'm going to weave it into this right now. Something a listener wrote in and said, could you explain what the Mar-a-Lago Accord is? The Mar-a-Lago Accord. There was something like this a number of years before in a similar action, and, you know, they named it something. This phrase was coined by U.S. money market wizard and previous Credit Suisse strategist Zoltan Pozner. Zoltan Pozner. Back in 2024 as an the idea that we can force countries to accept a weaker dollar and lower interest rates on their U.S. Treasury investments in order to still be protected by the U.S. security. So it's like, hey, that's your payment. You want Big Daddy to protect you? You're going to have to pay up. How are you going to do it? All right, you know how you're going to do it? You're going to borrow money, you know, we're going to do it at a lower dollar value and lower interest rates on the U.S. Treasury investments. And, you know, that's how it's going to work. You know, you take these deals. You borrow money you pay us for the our bonds, but, you know, we're only going to pay you like 2%. Wait a minute. The going rate's 4%. Yeah, but too bad. You want us to have those, you know, F-15s flying overhead? You want us to patrol your waters? Or in this day and age, you want us to shoot you out of the waters if you're in the Caribbean? You're going to have to accept that. And that was kind of this discussion of how things may operate. And what's interesting is that's kind of happening. We're seeing this happen in real time over the last number of months. One of the reasons that a lot of people are suggesting that the U.S. dollar has been coming down so substantially is because it's being pressured that way. That will, in turn, help extinguish the debt by inflation, inflating out the value of the bonds. Or, you know, deflating amount.
You pay back the debt with cheaper money.
Right. So something to think about. And that could be why we're seeing, you know, on, what are we on? U.S. government shutdown day 19, 20, 21, something like that, right?
Fourth week, I think.
Yeah. And that's why gold. I love gold. Taking a walloping over the last couple of days, but it was hit a new high just like 3 days ago.
Yeah. Skyrocketing.
Silver on fire. Platinum going crazy. That last move.
Called the platinum thing.
Yeah, that last. I still can't get platinum. I tried to get platinum at Costco. I couldn't get it. Get a bar. It's like $2,400 for a bar.
Yeah, because silver not a bar. $50, which is really high. I mean, silver traditionally is around, I don't know, $38.
Yeah, I think it popped to what, 52 or 53?
50 some, yeah, 50 plus.
That last little move there with gold and silver, this is a good lesson, because that last move on gold and silver, they're called like exhaustion breakouts. They're called, you know, exhaustion level kinds of moves where think of an airplane. You know, it goes up, it goes up, it goes up, and all of a sudden you start getting more vertical, right? You're going, now you're straight up. What happens? Stall speed happens, right? Think of that chart of gold. The plane is gaining altitude for a long time. That last burst goes vertical and it stalls. And then it just starts coming right back straight down. That's exactly what gold did over the last couple of days. I think silver's down 8 or 9% in the last 2 days. Worst beating gold and silver has taken in decades. In terms of a couple of days. I mean, it was going literally higher for months and months. I think, what is gold up, 50% this year or something?
I don't think it was that much, but it's quite a bit.
Let's look. There's a tracker. You can look at the GLD ETF. And let's go to year to date. 53%, sir.
Really?
Yep. Last 5 days, down 2.7. Today was down 6.43%. And there's another one. This SLV is another tracker. You can buy these outright. SLV is down 8% today. So year to date, silver is up 62%. And that's with the drubbing it took over the last couple of days. If it wasn't for that, the high here was 49.3, another 9%, 70%. Silver would have been up 70% this year.
It's ridiculous.
But do you see what I'm talking about that last bit of an exhaustion gap out? Yeah. So kind of interesting. This is a couple things that are people are like, why? Why has it been happening? Well, let me tell you what's happening. First, you had the momentum. You clear momentum of let's buy gold. Then you had the fear factor. What the hell is Trump going to do? What's the world going to do? What's going to happen in the Middle East? What's going to happen in Ukraine? You know, all the old things around the world, right? Then you had the consideration of the dollar going down, as we've talked about. And then the Diwali in India, where this is a big time of year where buying gold and silver on the Dhanteras, this is the holiday within, I guess, the Diwali season, is considered highly auspicious, right? It symbolizes wealth, prosperity. It invokes blessings from the goddess Lakshmi, the deity of wealth. Lord Dahavantari, who's the divine healer. All these things go into this. It's a big time for buying gold. Now, also, there's been a lot of buying of gold by the Chinese central bank, like lots. So all this kind of ended up in this mad rush and all the excitement that finally exhausted itself.
Talking about gold, have they ever gone into the Fort Knox to look around and take some photos to prove there's gold in there? I thought they were going to do that about 3, 4, 5 months ago. What happened to that?
Is it even necessary now that we don't have any backing of any of our currency or anything? We have, you know, the backing.
Well, they promised they were going to do it.
It's got to go. First of all, I don't know who's going to do it, but the only person I'm going to ask to do it, there's only one person that comes in mind to do this. You know who that is, right?
Peter Schiff.
Oh, that's an interesting one, too. No, I got somebody else. He, you know who it is. Once I say it, you're going to be, yeah. This is the kind of guy that does these things.
Oh, Geraldo Rivera.
Right? It's perfect for it.
Yeah. You can go in with Peter Schiff.
Yeah. Peter Schiff was on the show like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah, it was good. So anyway, all that's been going on, interesting. Okay. You know, we like to look at things like phrases and new terminologies and new marketing kind of, what would be the right word? What would be the word when you're trying to tantalize like an investor to do, you know, to herd somebody? What would that be? That would be
propagandistic phraseology.
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect. Propagandistic phraseology, if that's what that is. So there's a lot of phrases out there, right? You hear things that irk me a lot, like, oh, yeah, well, we got 47 million TAM. this whole total addressable market thing, right?
Yeah, I like that one.
You know, what's the TAM? What's the TAM? You get that all the, what's the TAM? Then you have, okay, well, you know, how many gigawatts are you going to be buying in chips relating AI power consumption? And that would be, you know, the number. It's all this kind of thing. Well, the latest one I heard, I just heard it twice today again this morning. It's a new one, at least for me. It's, ready?
Yeah.
We have the right to win.
The right to win?
The right to win.
How's that going to induce buying?
Well, I'll tell you why. So you have a CEO of a company that starts talking about, you know, we have this product, that product, and we have the right to win because, you know, we have the best, or not, they won't say it like that. We have the right to win in this department, in this sector, in this area. So this, I looked it up because it was kind of like really.
What does it mean? Does
yeah,
it
that's.
Mean that they have some sort of. They're granted by a king or something the right to win or they're entitled. Is it
yeah, that,
an
that's,
entitlement
yep,
kind
yep,
of a concept?
Yep, I think so. It's a business strategy concept. This is right out of the book that refers to a company's ability to enter a competitive market with a high probability of success based on its unique advantages. It's not an automatic entitlement, but it's earned through a coherent strategy that aligns to a company's way of play, its strategy. With its core capabilities and assets.
Way of play.
Yeah, the way of play. There's another one. Yeah, there's another one. The right to win. We have the right to win due to our way of play.
Brother.
Right. So who talked about this today? Today, this morning, on CNBC, as I was having a little bagel thin for breakfast, it was the CEO of the NASDAQ and the CEO of Goldman Sachs, both in separate interviews, used the same terminology.
Huh. It's obviously going around.
Yeah. So we have the right to win.
No, we do too on this podcast.
Yeah, we have the right to win in the podcast space. Yep. We talked about the Super Taco. That was the walk back of the 100% China tariffs. That was an extra Super Taco Bell taco. Warnings. David Solomon, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, also talking recently in Italy, he said a drawdown was likely to hit stock markets in the coming 2 years. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a bold prediction.
Bold. Going out on a limb, huh? He says, relating to what we're seeing right now to the dot-com bubble, you're going to see a similar phenomenon here.
I don't see it. I mean, I see this. I see a similar bubble. I mean, there's a bubble, but not the dot-com thing was very screwy.
Yeah. The problem is that the probability of us doing the same thing again
never happens.
But it'll be something. It'll be something different entirely.
Yeah, it's always some. It's never the same. That's what only reason people are interested in following it, because it's always something different. It'll be different enough that it will. You know, people would be analyzing it in terms of what happened in the past, saying, well, it's kind of like this, it's kind of like that, it's kind of like this. This reminds me of vintage wines in Bordeaux. Every time a good vintage comes out, they try to equate it with, well, it's kind of like a 29, but maybe it's a little more like a 45 or 61, maybe. You know, they're trying to place it in a spot in history when there's nothing to, you can't do it.
And the funny thing is, after the fact, you look back and you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was obvious.
Yeah, that's like stagflation.
It's obvious after the fact. So he said, over the next 12 to 24 months, we see a drawdown with respect to equity markets. I think there'll be a lot of capital that's deployed that will turn out to be nothing and will not deliver returns. And when that happens, people won't feel good. This.
Really?
Huh. Yes. This nugget of knowledge from the CEO of Goldman Sachs. And what does he make a year? Let's see.
What does he make a year?
Oh, we're going to find out. David. No, he's not doing his DJ gig anymore, right?
I hope not.
No. He made, in 2024, his comp package was $39
million. Oh, that's reasonable.
He's got a base salary of $2 million, $8.3 million cash bonus, and the remainder in stock and incentives. In addition, he received a $80 million retention award, conditional on him staying with the company for 5 more years. How do you like that? Hey, guy.
That's an incentive. That would keep him around.
Yeah, listen, do me a favor. You know, I need you to stay for a while. I'm going to pay you an extra $80 million. All right. Okay. And then what happens? He says, I'm leaving. They really want to keep him. And then he says, you know what? That $80 million wasn't enough. Bump it to $120 and I'll stay. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm. What's that's
like,
David's
like the athlete who does a great deal with his team, and then within a year he's changing the contract.
Interestingly enough, Jamie Dimon's 2024 compensation was what? $39 million.
Price fixing.
He had a base salary of $1.5 million, $37.5 million in performance based incentive compensation, $5 million cash bonus, and $32 million in performance share units. Not bad. Really, same amount. I want what he has, Daddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
he's making more than me.
Well, now Jamie Dimon is out with some warnings too. He's talking about. He's always has some flair. You know, he's got that New York, New Jersey kind of Long Island-ish accent going on, right? This is kind of a sloppy talking guy.
Tough guy.
Yeah. He talks about cockroaches related to the recent bankruptcies. You know, when there's one, there's probably more. We had the first brands group. These are the bankruptcy / fraud situations I was mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
So this, can you get closer to your microphone?
No, I can't really get much closer. I'm right on top of it.
We lost you. I mean, you're there, but it's very, very faint.
Nothing. I haven't changed anything.
Let me check mine.
Hello, out there.
Yeah, it was me. Actually, I don't know what happened. There you go. Talk.
You bumped the knob.
I guess so. I got so excited about the 39 mil. Jamie Dimon talking about cockroaches. We got First Brands Group, which is an auto parts supplier, which filed for bankruptcy with over $11 billion in liabilities. This is the company that did the invoice factoring, allegedly pledging the same receivables to multiple lenders. Then you got Tricolor Holdings, which was a subprime auto lender, which is accused of fraudulently pledging risky loan portfolios to multiple banks. See, this is what freaked everybody out. We had that, and we had one other thing.
Yeah, they're all doing the same game.
Why not? You got 12-year-olds probably doing the fresh out of college, doing
that, or 12-year-olds running an AI.
Yeah, running it through an AI approval process for the loans.
Yeah.
You would think that a basic process of discovery for financing of your loans to see if there is an attached deal already to either your current financials, current book of business, your invoices, or your AR, right? You would think that would be step one.
The first thing you check, yes.
And not only do you check it, you don't just say to the client, hey, by the way, are we the only ones? You do some, all these things are registered. All these deals are somewhere, signed somewhere. You have to look this stuff up, right?
Yeah, they're not all secret deals.
Very sloppy. Very, very sloppy. So, zero dated options. We see these daily turnarounds, especially on Fridays, where by the end of the day, things are getting pushed pretty well. And new studies are showing that zero date options push the end of the day is a big player in that process. So on an index of like the S&P 500, where like 35% of the top 10 holdings is the makeup of between Facebook or Meta, Apple and Amazon, and you look at all NVIDIA, the top 10 positions, the concentration of positions in the top holdings of the S&P 500, like 35% is the concentration. Can you imagine if those stocks go down?
It'd be a nightmare.
It's unbelievable. So what you do is you push up those names and then collect your back end. You just buy that in because everybody wants to buy it, and the funds just all buy it, and your banking just buys it, and you buy the futures and all that, and you have these zero-date options, and you get over the number, and it's great. Friday 10/17, if you look back at that, great example of what happened there. Decliners outpaced advancers all day. Small cap is down. Mega cap is up. They're pushing the big names to push the indices so that they can have the options on either the index or the option on the stocks do well, the zero dates. And as the day progressed, the squeezing continued. And, you know, 180 degrees on the Friday before. Just rotated around. And a lot of discussion is being held. Not discussion like, well, we got to get rid of those. That's not what I'm saying. They're just like trying to figure out what kind of influence did these really have? And what should we make of it? Because again, the retail traders have become a very big, powerful, not a lobby, but a powerful,
it's a variable.
Yeah,
the retail guys, in fact, that's all, if you ever watch Charles Payne's show,
mm-hmm.
Making Money, on Fox Business, one of the few shows that actually concentrates on stock tips,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Trump news, that's all he talks about.
What, the zero date options?
The retail guy's running the show.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, today, you see with Beyond Meat, that stock was dead in the water. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Beyond Meats.
Yeah, we did.
It's up enormously, like 360% in the last 3 days.
Unbelievable.
It's at like $4.50 from like 50 cents. And I think it was up 22% after the close as well.
What's the reason for this?
There's two reasons. So it was up 146% today, another 22% after hours. Last week it was at, year to date, the stock is up 22%, just miraculously. On a five-year basis, it's down. Oh, no, that's not right. I'm sorry. Year to date, it's down 6% still. On a five-year basis, it's down 97.89%. What's the reason? Well, one thing is, supposedly it was some Walmart deal. But the second thing was, it was added to a meme stock basket ETF.
Meme stock.
So it kind of got a big, kapow.
How do we get to find out what's going to go in the meme stock basket before they put it in?
Which is a good question, because on October 20th, on Friday, October 17th, at the close, okay, this was 73%. So the question is, that was Friday. Today's Tuesday, right? So let's look here. The 21st, that's today, right? The news is that it was included in Roundhill's meme stock ETF. That's the news. That's on the 21st. So, yeah, 600% in three days. So the point is, who let the cat out of the bag on this one?
And you know it, they're going to do that constantly. Is there some way you can see it in the chart?
If something's moving like crazy, but then, you're going to play this thing up.
No, I mean, if you go back far enough, can you see the, if somebody knows something in advance, it's going to go on the meme stock pile, that somebody's going to be picking it up in advance.
How is Beyond Meat down 97%, the meme stock? What makes it that? Is a meme stock a piece of shit stock that should be dead in the water and bankrupt? Is that a meme stock?
It seems to me.
Maybe with the big short position. Who's shorting the stock? Well, we do know that if the stock's at 50 cents, it can still go to 25.
Yeah, you can still make money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who's going to do that? Is anybody in their right mind going to do that? If the stock
short
is
at 50?
The stock is down 97.
No, you want to short it at a dollar.
What I'm saying is, the stock is down 97%. Isn't the general run over?
I would think so. I would think the stock is over.
Well, yeah, and that's a non-touch, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you'd stay away from it. Yeah. You wouldn't even short it at 25, 50 cents or 25 cents.
No, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, because it could any dead cat bounce, it's going to wipe you out.
I mean, this is probably shortable any second here. Just like, by the way, you were totally right about Oracle, even though it's not showing up in the game numbers, but... Oracle is down 20% from that top move, that big capitulation, short squeeze / oh my God, OpenAI is going to pay us $300 billion.
Trillions.
Yeah. They were going to pay was it $300 billion over 10 years or something like that? And you called bullshit.
Yeah, I did call bullshit.
And we both said, you know, wait a minute. OpenAI is coming up with, you know, all this wonderful money, yet they're losing money. How is this all happening? Then they came up with more money for somebody else. You know, it's the Oprah Winfrey, I'll give you a billion, I'll give you a billion, I'll give you a billion. And I think they caught on to this whole thing saying, you know, how many times over? Same thing, same. Again, it's the
same as the bank scam.
Same as the bank scam. Same as the producers. How many times can you give out money you don't have? On the hope that you do have. And that's the same thing that's going on with the vendor financing. So Oracle got a nice boost. That was great. But it came right back down to earth. Not all the way, but a substantial amount, 20%. That's pretty good. GM, on the other hand, did really well. Interesting. If you look at a comparison of GM and Ford, pretty interesting to look at the two different stocks and the performance there. Ford is like stuck in a rut. GM is doing great. In fact, symbol GM, a whole different look of this. So GM was up 15% today, by the way. It's up
for what?
Well, they had earnings, I'll tell you that. But let me say something else before it's up 80% in the last 5 years. Where Ford, on the other hand, in the last 5 years, is up 50%, but has come down and been pretty much stagnant since 2023. So GM, it had its best day in trading since 2020, second best trading on the market since its 2009 emergence from bankruptcy, because they came in with adjusted earnings of $2.80 per share when expectations were 50 cents lower at $2.30. Revenue blew it out. They had like $3 billion more in revenue. They had $48.5 billion versus $45 billion. Their adjusted earnings before interest and taxes was $3.38 billion versus $2.7 billion. And they reduced their expected impact on the tariffs to between, which is still not nothing. It's not a small amount, but between $3.5 billion and $4 billion, down from $4 to $5 billion. So pretty impressive numbers. And Mary Barra was talking about all the, you know, the reasons why they're so great and so wonderful and all this stuff. And probably they have the right to win, I guess, probably.
Right to win, there you go.
You know?
Yeah.
It was a very impressive quarter, considering the fact that they're dismantling most of their EV production, refitting their factories, and I guess they have cars that people like these days, that interest rates are really not that low, and that the consumers...
I'm trying to figure out what car that what they're selling that I would have any interest in at all.
Let's see.
I mean, pretty much that Chrysler Group has got the minivan thing locked up.
They're selling
the
trucks.
Ford's got the pickup truck market, I think.
No, the Silverado. And the cement.
Really, you think the Silverado is doing better than the F-150? I thought it was the best pickup truck you could buy. It's too big, by the way.
Let's see. F-150. How many, what do we say, F-150s in 2025? 620,000 units. Of which is the best-selling truck in line? Yeah. So 620,000 units, where GM has sold 282,000 of the Chevy Silverado, CFC Sierra is about 166. So between the two, the GMC Sierra, which is probably the same kind of car, you know, they just repackage it. I don't know. I have to look at that. But I don't know. It's also their. The Equinox, 129,000. For whatever reason, they're selling. Ford can't get out of their way anyway. That's a different discussion.
I agree with that.
Number one best-selling vehicle in the U.S. is the F-Series pickup truck. The best.
Yeah, Ford has got management problems. They've always had. They have a certain kind of weird arrogance at the management level that is kind of hard to put your finger on why it's there. It reminds me from my experience of the old General Electric hacks.
Or IBM.
Years gone by. Yeah, IBM to some extent, but the General Electric guys, the old timers, the before, you know, they've come to get all busted up during the Jack Welch era. They had these guys, they thought their shit didn't stink. It was the most arrogant group of people I've ever run into.
Yeah, until they got rank, what was it called? Rank filing? Stacked ranking, yeah. Yeah. That shut them all up.
Yeah, that'll do you in.
So pretty good. Now, on the other hand, we had some great numbers from GM. We talk about that. The number one selling car is in America is the Ford F-150. Then it's the Chevy Silverado.
Those are pickup trucks,
right? Right. Those are the number one sellers.
Doesn't anybody buy cars anymore? No. They're just all Toyotas.
I don't understand a pickup truck. I mean, it seems like a lot of wasted space for the majority of time not being used.
No, they're a part-time car.
Right.
In my opinion, I don't know why people do drive them around all the time, but they're too big. They don't navigate well.
Well, we're in the minority here, though, obviously. Now, meanwhile, Ferrari posted their worst trading day ever last Thursday after the luxury car maker updated its full year and its 2030 guidance. 2030. So they're a little ahead of their time, it seems.
I'd say it's 5 years from now.
Yeah. All of it fell short of expectations. Expected revenue of 7.1 billion euros this year, up from a previous forecast of more than 7 billion. But net revenue expected to be around 9 billion in 2030. I don't know how they could do this.
Does it take them 5 years to build a car?
I think they have a long cycle.
Well, they obviously have a long cycle. The cars are more or less hand-built.
Yeah. So there was something going on. They didn't like it. They took away the EV thing. There's an EV thing going on. There's like a lot of little...
That was idiotic.
Yeah. Who wants a Ferrari that's an EV?
That way it can be nice and quiet.
That's so dumb. It's like, hey, you know what? I got a great Harley for you that doesn't make any noise. That's going to go over
that's
well.
The point.
Yeah. Quantum stocks, J.P. Morgan announced that it will invest up to $10 billion in 27 specific indices, industries, including quantum computing. And that sent everything back up to the moon, up a few 100% this year. The Rigetti, the IonQ, quantum bits. So, hey, big Apple news. Two things big. First of all, Apple hit an all-time high this week. Yesterday was up big. That's what really jacked the Dow Jones yesterday.
Yeah, why?
Well, because they said that iPhone Series 17 outperformed predecessor in early sales in China and in the United States. This was from a research firm Counterpoint without material facts. Because remember, Apple doesn't release this information. But they're saying the newer models outsold the iPhone 16 series by 14% during their first 10 days of availability in the two countries. Sales of the base model iPhone 17 nearly doubled in China compared to the iPhone 16 during the same period. Very, very, very big. Everybody's excited. We're making headways. They're buying us in China again, which I don't know. Weren't we supposed to not be selling to China? I don't know what's happening. But the fact is, I guess if you have dinner with President Trump, everything's good. Now, they also made another big announcement. This is kind of different. I thought this was really interesting. Apple and Formula One. I don't know if you're a Formula One fan.
I'm familiar with it. I have an autographed cap from Schumacher.
From Schumacher.
Well, see, you're not a Formula One guy.
Clearly not. But
Schumacher was I think he's German. He was one of the winningest Formula One guys in history.
In what year?
Retired some time ago.
Oh, yeah. It was a while ago. Well, if you want to watch Formula One F1 racing starting soon.
Which is kind of boring to watch, in my opinion.
Well, it's better than... You know what I heard is really boring? My friends went to the F1 in Miami. It's right down the road here. That's... if you don't have the... First of all, getting in there is difficult. You really can't get out. It's loud, which is part of the deal. But all you see is zip, zip, zip. That's it.
No, you just see cars zipping by.
Yeah. Apple and F1 Racing, Formula One, announced that F1 races will be exclusively shown on Apple TV in the United States beginning next year. What do you think of that?
Yeah, boy, I've been a... Yeah, let me sign up. That's not interested.
But it's a 5-year deal. I thought that was fascinating that you will not be able to watch F1 racing.
You can anyway.
Well, yeah, okay. But I'm saying, if you wanted to somehow do that... So the partnership builds on Apple's deepening relationship with the Formula One following the global success of the Apple original film's adrenaline-fueled blockbuster, which is the highest-grossing sports movie of all time. F1, the movie. Highest-grossing sports movie of all time. I was looking up some other sports movies. They didn't come close. You know what the second-highest sports-related, sports movie of all time was?
What?
The Blind Side.
Never heard of it.
What are you talking about? What a great movie.
Never heard of it.
It was a story about this guy who, I don't want to say learning disabilities, it wasn't that. He was a guy that had to get through college, and he was kind of big bot, like a refrigerator Perry. Big guy, big dude. Was he at Ohio, or where was he? I forgot what school he was at. Anyway, the long story short, he was playing offensive line, and he wasn't it was just a whole thing. And then somebody said, he was very fond of his mother and this other woman, and they gave him a prompt, said, protect the quarterback like you were protecting me. And that was that. And it was just a beautiful story. It was a great story. It was a great story, The Blind Side. Then you have they put a Happy Gilmore in there. Two of the highest others are Adam Sandler movies. I think the Waterboy or something.
Yeah, and those would be determined, even though they're just flat-out comedies,
yeah,
because they had a sports angle.
Jerry Maguire.
Quote-unquote sports movies.
Rocky. Okay. Rocky.
Well, Rocky, I would say, was
Jerry Maguire was definitely a sports movie.
Yeah.
Longest Yard. How about The Longest Yard?
Yeah, I saw that.
Right? How about one of my favorites of all time? Field of Dreams or The Sandlot.